Welcome to the weekly podcast from the Church of England. The assisted dying bill will be debated by MPs this week and aims to legalise suicide for terminally ill people who have less than 6 months to live. The Archbishop of Canterbury spoke out against the bill, saying the UK will cross a legal and ethical Rubicon if the bill is passed. The chief executive of a hospice says if the assisted dying bill goes through, it could put them at risk. The Reverend Canon Peter Holliday has been at St Giles Hospice in Lichfield for 15 years. They care for around 6,000 people a year, the vast majority in their own homes. I started by asking him why he's opposed to the bill.
I'm opposed to the assisted dying bill on several grounds. From the point of view of a hospice chief executive, I'm opposed to it, first of all, because of the pressure it would put on staff if it became law. In particular, where would I find doctors who were prepared to write prescriptions? Where would I find nurses who were prepared to sit alongside a dying person? And that's always assuming that my organisation was prepared to have assisted dying on its premises at all. If it were prepared to have assisted dying on its premises, and that may be what the public expect of us, then what might happen within a staff team, for example, where half the staff team were passionately against assisted dying, and some were in favour of it. So you can see the possibility for friction within a staff team. But perhaps overall, my real concern would be about the attitude of the public, so that with the vast majority of the public in favour of assisted dying, would they expect the hospice to be involved in assisted dying or not?
What might this mean for funding?
So far as funding is concerned, we have nearly 70% of our funding coming from the general public, from our local community. Now, if 82% of that local community are in favour of assisted dying, if the hospice were to say that it was against assisted dying, would that lead to a reduction in community funding? And then, of course, the other 33% of our funding comes from the National Health Service. National Health Service requires us in our contracts to comply with the requirements of the NHS. Now, if the NHS is going to be required to offer assisted dying, there is, of course, the possibility that it would require us as an organisation contracting with the NHS also to offer assisted dying. If we as an organisation were able, and at the moment under the terms of the bill there is no indication we would be able, but if we were able to say that assisted dying was not something that would happen on our premises, would that prejudice our funding from the NHS?
What do you think this might mean for hospices then if this was to happen?
If there is no possibility within the final legislation for hospices to opt out of being a part of what is effectively assisted suicide, then there is nervousness about where our funding might be found in the future. Would the public continue to support us? And indeed, would the NHS continue to give us grants under contract?
Do you think hospices are at risk?
If community funding goes down and NHS funding goes down, hospices would be gravely at risk. And this, the possibility that we could be required to engage with assisted suicide is yet another example of areas that put hospices at risk.
What do you think that might lead to? Could this lead to hospices having to reduce their services, or where could it end, do you think?
It could certainly result in hospices having to reduce services, because if income goes down, that's what hospices have to do. They have to either cut particular parts of their services or just reduce services in general. But I think there is a wider issue as to whether some hospices would consider that to safeguard funding, they would allow assisted suicide on their premises. There is no indication of any hospice that would be prepared to do that. But if that were the case, then would we find ourselves with certain institutions where people had to go for assisted dying? It just opens up a can of worms, really, in terms, and we can only react to what the law of the land is at the time.
Going back to one of the points you made at the beginning about the impact on your care team, how would you see that working?
Well, first of all, if one goes through the procedures that would be necessary, there has to be a doctor that is prepared to express a view on whether the patient is likely to die within the next 6 months. And certainly all the doctors I've spoken to have spoken of the impossibility of having any clear prognosis of 6 months other than in a very few cases. It may only be in 4 out of 10, 5 out of 10, 6 out of 10 cases that there could be a reasonably reliable prognosis that the patient is in the last 6 months of life. But assuming you've got a doctor who's prepared to take that gamble, then you've got to have a doctor who is prepared to write the prescription, and you have to have a doctor or a nurse who's prepared to be with the patient, to give the patient the lethal draft, and then to be with the patient whilst they die. Now, that's always assuming you can find people who are prepared to do that. The evidence that we have very clearly is that the majority of doctors involved in palliative medicine are against assisted suicide. And so whether that would then leave hospices having to find a travelling doctor who was prepared to make an opinion and then to write a prescription, we don't know. But we can't quite see what else would happen if you have an organisation where none of the medical team is prepared to engage in assisted suicide.
What do you think it would do to the atmosphere of the hospice? It's a very supportive place. It does amazing work. But how would it change the way that it feels?
I think clearly for some patients and for some next of kin, they would find great relief from assisted dying being available. I think my real concern would be with the staff team and indeed with the team of volunteers, that hospices tend to have a higher proportion of people who are against assisted suicide within their staff and volunteer team than the general public. And if a hospice was required to offer assisted suicide and you have a staff team where some are dramatically opposed because they really believe in the hospice ethos of giving the best possible care until a natural death, and you have some members of the team who are prepared to be a part of assisted suicide, the potential for ructions within the staff team would be enormous. How you keep a staff team together and working together to the same ends when you have that very distinct split, I don't know.
Peter Holliday, the chief executive of St Giles Hospice in Lichfield and also deputy chairman of Hospice UK. And you can hear a longer interview with Peter on our SoundCloud page. The Reverend Michael Wenham was diagnosed with a form of motor neurone disease in 2002. He's lost his speech but continues to write a blog about his illness and his opposition to assisted dying. I spoke to his wife, Jane, and started by asking her what Michael's quality of life is like.
I have become used to it. I suppose anyone looking on would not think it was wonderful. He is limited, very limited, into what he can do. He can still just about walk around the house using a frame on wheels, but wouldn't let go of it, so his balance is not good. Fortunately, he still has use in his hands and his arms, so he can work on a laptop. His voice, which was the first thing to go, is quite restricted, although you can understand it once you tune in. I sometimes get completely the wrong end of the stick when he talks, but I can still understand most of it, what he says, even if he has to repeat himself.
And in terms of your caring responsibilities, what do you have to do for Michael?
Well, I have to do most of the things he needs done physically, like I have to help him get dressed. He can wash himself, but I have to help him when he's finished at the toilet. I have to cook his meals and do his washing and, you know, all the sort of everyday things of life. I can leave him for an hour or two, but I would need to be around after that to help him move, to give him his meals.
If you think back to when he was diagnosed all those years ago, what impact did that have on both you and him at the time?
Well, it was obviously huge news to be given, knowing that it is a degenerative disease of which most people die within a couple of years when they've been given the diagnosis of MND. His, in fact, is a rarer, slower form. So we've had time to adjust to it. But obviously he therefore has to live with it for a long spell of time. I think given the option, I'd rather have, well, obviously because he is still around, I would much rather he had the slower form. But for him, it is not easy.
Now, Michael's been very, very outspoken about the assisted dying bill, which is obviously being debated this week. Why is he so opposed to it?
Well, he believes that all human life is precious, whether it's however damaged or weak, whether you're young or old. And therefore, it should really be protected. And he feels that at the moment, as the law stands, it does that. But if any changes go ahead to the law, then life is not protected, especially for those who are vulnerable.
Now, he's in a pretty unique position to be able to have this opinion, living with the condition he does. How has his illness shaped his attitude to assisted dying?
I suppose he obviously met far more people who are have got physical illnesses in various ways. I suppose it's given him the time to think about it. Before, when he was in working and busy life, he didn't really think about it. But I think once you're in that position, you do think about it, and you're aware of other people's frailties and needs.
Now, you both went to meet Debbie Purdy and Tony Nicholinson for a BBC programme, I understand. What was that meeting like? Because they were both very in favour of having a sister dying.
Yes. With Debbie Purdy, there's actually quite a lot in common. I mean, the way it got on quite well, except that her life seemed to be focused on fighting. This is what gave her purpose in life, one felt, almost, that you know, she wanted to bring this about. I think mainly to sort of, partly for her husband's sake and for her own sake and for other people in the future. But obviously the fundamental difference was that we didn't agree that life should ever be taken. But we could understand where she was coming from.
You said that her purpose of life appeared to be that she was trying to get this safeguard for her husband. What would you say Michael's purpose in life is?
I think his purpose is actually he enjoys life. He likes meeting people, family. We have a lovely family. He wants to carry on enjoying being with them.
If the law on assisted dying was changed, how do you think you would feel as the carer of somebody with this prognosis?
I think I would feel sad. I hate the thought that anybody would be able to end Michael's life prematurely. I hate the thought for other people, although obviously some people really want that, but yes, I mean, I can see it will be hard, and it will be costly to actually see Michael suffering, and I'm sure there will be times when I shall long and pray that he won't last, you know, that God would take him quickly, it might well not be the case, but I would not want, actually, be in that position to say, yes, take his life.
Jane Wenham, whose husband Michael has a form of motor neurone disease. You can read his blog at mydonkeybody.blogspot.co.uk. Professor Nigel Bigger is Regius Professor of Moral and Pastoral Theology at the University of Oxford. He has this message for MPs debating the bill.
I'd say to MPs, don't go down this route, because it tends toward assisted suicide on demand, which involves an abandonment by society of any public commitment to the value of human life.
John Wyatt is Professor of Ethics at University College in London. He explains one of the reasons he's opposed to the bill.
What the question is whether society as a whole, and the medical profession in particular, should set up an entire system to help people, to support people in killing themselves. And that, it seems to me, is a step too far. Instead, we want to vote to try to prevent suicide, to tell people there is a better way to die at peace, with proper support and with expert care.
And you can find out more about the Assisted Dying Bill on the Church of England's website, www.churchofengland.org. That's it for this week's podcast. I'm Gillian Moody. Thanks for listening.